Okay, I want to welcome to another episode of Must Be the Music, Halftime Chat. And today I've got a special guest with me. As I always say, all my guests are special. Today I've got a producer, songwriter. He has been part of the New Jack Swing production team since the early days. He comes from Columbus, Georgia. He was part of the family of the of Basic Black. When they moved to New York, when they split and moved to Virginia with Teddy, he joined Mucho and continued the production there. He's been credited for a number of hits and remixes that you might associate with Teddy, but it's going to be great talking to Sprague and getting his story. So I'm going to invite him in and see how it goes. Hey Sprague, how you doing?
There we go. We're in here.
yes, you are. How you doing?
I'm good, my man.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely glad we could have this interview. One of the things that you know, a lot of us who are very familiar with New Jack Swing, we've seen your name associated with a lot of productions, whether it's with Teddy or whether it's by yourself. And so it's going to be great. And then, you know, we interviewed Basic Black and Mucho, and they all called your name, you know, as being with them from the very beginning. So it'll be good to hear a lot of, you know, where you start, you're starting, you know, the music beginning stuff, and then where you are now, what we can expect going forward. I told the fans that I was going to interview you, and so there's a number of questions and that they told me to ask you. So we'll go for those throughout the course of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
So I did introduce you as, I assume you're from Columbus, Ohio, Georgia, like the rest. Or is it true?
Yes, sir. I'm Columbus, Georgia boy, born and bred.
Okay. So how did you get into music? What was your avenue into the music?
I've always kind of been into music. I'm a church boy, so, you know, I grew up with, you know, singing and, you know, interplaying instruments with a couple of my dad's quartet groups. So I played drums, bass, and then I decided I was going to get into keys because that was like the next transition of what everybody was doing at the time. So that's how I really got in as far as the, you know, saying music is concerned. And but with Basic Black, I, you know, went to school with Spec and KB.
Okay.
We all went to the same high school, you know, us, Dallas, and a few other people that you know, everybody knows. And they were kind of doing some band stuff. So I would hang out with them on the weekends.
Okay.
And do their live band, because they had a live band called Basic Black, you know, originally.
Yeah.
And then when Gene came down, you know, the story with Gene came down, they did the audition. The rest of the band couldn't really go. So it was like, you know, we kind of filled in with some things.
Oh, what do you mean the rest couldn't go? How many?
Well, like they had a guitar player that, like, you know, they had a guy that was in the original band that was a part of the military.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So those guys, you know, so they really couldn't just, you know, just take off and pursue their dreams like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of put together like a little team of people that was kind of like going for the audition, you know what I'm saying? Of course, you know, KB, Spec, and Mucho were a part of the group, Basic Black, but it was myself and this chick named, young lady named Lucretia, that were like the additional pieces that, you know, we need a keyboard player. So, it was me and her that kind of like filling those spots.
Oh, so you joined, you actually, when Gene took the through them, you, because I know they mentioned that she was she had the car, so she was definitely had to be part of the group and stuff.
Yep. Okay. It was me and Lucretia. And so, you know, basically, you know, when Gene came down, he offered us the opportunity to be today's band. It's like, we had to get to New York, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, if we got there, we had the, you know, the audition, and then, you know, that worked out well for, you know, for me, it ended up being like, I ended up being a roadie, you know what I'm saying? Which was the best thing for me at the, you know what I'm saying? Not at the time in my mind, but at the end of the day, that turned out being the best option, you know?
So what was the, what's the, I guess before I get to what's a roadie, what did your family think? I mean, you're in the church playing music and all of a sudden you're off to New York.
You already know what they thought. I mean, I didn't tell my dad that I left. So I mean, you know, we had a, you know, a good relationship, but I didn't want to be, you know, say at the time, I didn't want to be persuaded not to do this, take this chance. So I just didn't tell him. And I said, I'm going to go and see what happens. And if something happens, then I'll tell him, you know. So it just happened that something happened. So, you know,
okay.
And like he was mad. And, you know, for many years, they called me the prodigal son.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it was just, you know, it wasn't like they said it all the time. But, you know, certain people would call me that when I go back home to go to service or go, you know, say, oh, the prodigal son returned. You know, like a pass off, you know, pass off insult slash. Okay. Whatever, but you know, it was cool. I mean, it was cool, man. I can't, you know, say that I would change anything, you know what I'm saying? Because like I said, being that what I was doing wasn't necessarily playing keyboards, which is what I wanted to do.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? They had a chance between to do either me, because they kept one of the guys from Ray Watkins, which, you know, I'm pretty sure you know who that is. They end up keeping Ray, so it was either me or Lucretia, and it was like, okay, it'll be dope to have a girl in the band. You know what I'm saying, versus another guy. So she ended up getting the position on, you know what I'm saying, because they wanted a girl in that band. So,
okay. So who made the decision? Was that Gene or the guys?
The guys made it, you know what I'm saying? They made it as a consensus, you know what I'm saying? They made it as a consensus. You know, we I was actually preparing myself to go back to Columbus, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And one of my friends, Randy Hutchinson, who played drums with Keith. He was like, you know what I'm saying, why are you going home? He's like, you know, why don't you just be a roadie for today? You know what I'm saying? It's going to be plenty of band opportunities. So okay. I was like, well, what's a roadie? Because I had no idea what a roadie was.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is a roadie? Yeah, what is it?
Well, you know, the roadie is the guy that carried the equipment around and, you know, set up the stuff, set up the stage. And, you know, they actually needed somebody to do that because they didn't have anybody. So, you know, I thank God on that note, because, you know, we're in New York. That's like the roadie headquarters of America. You know what I'm saying? It's like every live band, you know, all the live bands, you know, go out of New York, and it's like they couldn't find absolutely anybody. And my guy, Don, he was like, let me show you how to work this stuff. And, you know, I went back with him. He showed me how to set up the setup and how things work, and, you know, a lot of troubleshoot a little bit. And then they just took it apart and said, all right, set it up. You know what I'm saying? So I ended up doing that, and then they gave me the gig. So,
okay. So, I mean, I guess the big question everyone always has is that, you know, you guys, you know, I spoke to Speck and I've spoken to Mucho and stuff, but you go to New York and you see Teddy, the super producer, because he even at that stage, he had done Make It Last Forever. He was doing all the hip hop stuff and the guy stuff, playing the key, and he's a keyboard player. So, what was it like for you as a keyboard player watching him?
Days. You know, the funny thing is that before we even got the opportunity, I was working at this convenience store, and I was listening to Keith Sweat, and I was like, man, I love this vibe.
One of my favorite albums.
I would love to work for the producer that made this stuff, which is, you know, I didn't know who Teddy Riley was, because I didn't actually have the record. I just used to listen to it on the radio.
Okay.
And I was like, yo, man, I would love to work with that producer. So once we got the opportunity, it's like, you know, it was super inspirational. I used to go leave rehearsal from today, and I would go to the studio and, like, you know, sleep under the console, you know what I'm saying? You know, and watching Teddy and watching Dave Way and Bernard Bell.
But those guys were with him back in those early days.
Yeah, man, those guys, like, you know, like Bernard really showed me a lot about the drum machine. Both he and Mucho showed me a lot about, you know, working the MPC. And they're like, you know, saying, just watching Ted and, you know, watching Ted create, you know, saying, with, you know, with the engineer and Bernard, you know, the way they created was really cool.
I guess, I mean, because we're going to get into your career progression, and I guess I want to get back to you today. They're doing their rehearsals, they're performing. Are you still learning? Are you still playing your keyboards? Are you still playing instruments? Are you still keeping that going? Or what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the one thing about being a roadie is like I had the whole stage to myself. So
okay.
You know what I'm saying? So like when, you know, when you get to a gig and you gotta set up the equipment, the keyboards, it's like, okay, you know, sound guys like play that keyboard for me. So
okay.
I would get, you know, saying I would, you know, play, you know, to do the warm ups for, you know, different parts so I can, you know, I would play different parts of the song with the drum machine, with the whole thing playing, you know what I'm saying, to make sure everything was working. So I would get my practice there, and then like I said, me being the roadie, and I was really like, you know, today's production manager, because they only had me at the time. So
wow,
I would have the key to the locker to bring stuff home. So when we would get back, I would bring the drum machine out and the keyboards out, and then I had all of the whole, you know, saying GR production, New Jack Swing sound set. You know, I had the whole briefcase. So
wow,
I was one of the ones that had a backup copy of all the shows.
So at that, in those early days that you were there, was it Today, Basic Black and Guy, or was there any other groups that you that were part of the show and all that?
Initially, it was like, you know, Basic Black was just a backup band for Today, so it would be like Today, Guy. We did a few shows with Abstract.
Okay, Mary and Marsha.
Zan was around, but he was more or less in the round of, you know, writing capacity, you know what I'm saying?
Okay,
and
we'd
heard his album, but it wasn't out yet.
Okay.
Then, who else we had? Deja.
Redhead?
The group Deja.
Yeah, and Redhead Kingpin,
that's my dude. That's okay. My dude right there, you know what I'm saying? And Rex and Effect, of course, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was like, that was all of the guys that originally, you know what I'm saying, we were around when we first got to New York.
And so... I mean, had you heard about these guys before you moved to New York? Because you said
Rex and Effect, yes. Today, him and me, I only knew the Himmelry record.
Okay.
And that was, you know what I'm saying? But other than that,
I'm sure you've known about Guy and when they came
Guy,
back.
Yeah, Guy, of course. You know, Guy, of course. Yeah. You know, they were like the that was like the group at the time, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then from your point, so when you had the back doing all this stuff, were you then thinking, what was your idea about where you wanted to go? Did you think I wanted to go in production? Did you think I want to be on stage? What did you, were you, when you were watching all this stuff and doing all the production stuff, what did you have a vision as to where you wanted to go to?
Not really. I mean, initially it was just, you know, I was just like, you know, saying super like hype about being around a production, being around just the atmosphere. It wasn't necessarily to produce. I mean, that was in, you know, of course, in the back of your brain, you know, I would learn how to do that, but it wasn't, that wasn't my drive. Initially, it was just like, okay, I'll be, you know, saying Abstract, which was the plan. I was going to be Abstract's MD, music director, and
okay.
I'll learn how to program their stuff. And we were really cool, you know what I'm saying, Marsha and Mary,
and Mary,
you know what I'm saying, Topaz. So
yeah,
we're kind of like developing a relationship as like, okay, you know, this guy didn't make Today's band, but he's going to be y'all's like keyboard, you know, programmer and things like that. So we started making that kind of connection, you know what I'm saying? So so initially it was, yeah, just to be a part of the band was, you know, my you know, ambition at the time.
But how, I mean, you know, a lot of people, as I say, a lot of us who followed Teddy from a long time ago, look at GR Productions and think, well, that was the first sort of, you know, we have Uptown, we had Bad Boy, we had Death Row. But before all of that stuff, I mean, Motown was probably the only other label that had like all that talent under one roof and everyone was together. But that was such, that was in the 60s. So when you come into the 80s, that GR Production had all that talent, and it's a pity that it didn't, you know, it fell apart quickly. But what was it like when you know you've got Abstract doing their thing there, you've got Today, you've got Guy, you've got Deja, you've got all this stuff. I mean, did you just think, wow, we're going to take over the music?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, well, Gene's, God rest his soul. I mean, Gene's, his drive was to, you know, because he would talk to us about certain things. He's like, his thing was to create a situation where he had every group, you know, a girls group, a guy group, solo male, solo female,
wow,
you know, and like, you know, the rap group. So he could do just like, you know, with the Motown days, the Motown
reviews. Yeah.
Gene wanted to do the GR Productions, and I mean, he carried it like that. I mean, like at first, when we first got there, it was like, you know, he would tell guys, okay, if you book guy, you got to book today.
Wow.
So we end up getting on a lot of the Budweiser Superfest side shows, like those gigs where they would come off to the Superfest and do the little side shows in the smaller venue.
Wow.
We end up doing all of those shows, and then we would do some Budweiser Superfest shows.
Wow.
So that, I mean, him doing that created an atmosphere for what he wanted to do with his playing with the company, which is, you know what I'm saying? I think Puffy took that, you know what I'm saying, because he used to be around back then. I think he took that point and did it with Bad Boy, you know what I'm saying? Like, wow. I'm going to get something to have every group, you know what I'm saying? You know, yeah. He made it work, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. I think, wow. Oh, so even back in those early days, Puffy, I thought he came later.
Yeah, but Puffy was still around. He was an A&R dude, so he was still around, you know what I'm saying? You would see him, you know what I'm saying? Oh. You would see him in different places, you know what I'm saying? We would be at different events. He would be around. He wasn't the Puffy that everybody know now.
But was he with Uptown or was he just on his...
He was still with Uptown at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because Guy was with Uptown. So he was always watching and seeing what you guys were doing.
Yeah,
oh, okay. Okay. So I guess a lot of us don't know much about... I know about Abstract and Deja and stuff, but what was it like for them performing? Because I've seen their videos, but I never saw them live. I mean, could they hold their own live?
Oh, definitely. They sounded pretty much like the record. That was Gene Stickler. Like, you know, Gene was a Stickler. Like, yo, we got to practice. You got to sound like this record.
Wow.
Don't be deviating far from the record. Get that down. We're going to do this one little part where you know you give them the all you got. And don't do that no more in the show. And he was really a Stickler about practice. I mean, like I said, we hadn't been there... I think the first day we got there, you know, he had got locked into the studio and they couldn't leave. He's like, yo, because I think he came in to listen to the show and they didn't have the show right, you know what I'm saying? And Gene was basically like, yo, we ain't doing no show this weekend. Y'all gonna stay in here and rehearse all night. And when I come in the morning, if y'all ain't got this show right, I'm canceling the gig.
Wow.
And so they end up having to stay really all night, you know what I'm saying? And we were there all night too because we were getting ready for this today thing. But, you know, they stayed all night. And I think Gene came in at like 10 o'clock that next morning to listen to them do the show.
My goodness. But, and I guess, you know, when you see them performing later on, you could see how important it was to get it right. And I guess that's what Barry Gordy was about, the excellence. If you want to get to the next level, you need to put on the show.
Teddy took on that mantle too. You know, I'm used to that with him. It's like, you know, that just when I got back with Ted, it's like that's what we did. Like, you know, we practiced, you know what I'm saying? You ain't want to practice, he gets super mad.
Okay, no, we'll get to that. So, and I guess the other thing, how was today? Because they had that first album was really hot, but how were they performing? And above, you know, Bob's probably one of the top five, you know, since from the 90s to today, still one of the top three or four vocalists. But how was he with the rest of the house today and their performance back in those days?
Oh, man, we were hot, man. I mean, like, you know, it's funny because, you know, after Mucho started doing the programming for the show, like Ted and Mucho used to get into these little programming beefs.
Oh, what do you mean?
You know, well, not beefs, but like, you know, these little competitions.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Because like shows that we were on with them, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, say it became a competition with inside of GR Productions. So we, because like, you know, Gene's thing is like, yo, when you get on stage, you smash everybody.
Yeah.
So that's how, you know, we used to kind of carry it. And, you know, saying like, yo, when we get on stage, we here to smash everybody, even Guy, you know what I'm saying? So it was just that thing, you know, and, you know, I always try to make sure I do my part by making sure that nothing break down.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything is running. You know what I'm saying? So I'm running around the stage. I'm learning how to do monitors and have front of house. I'm learning how to do everything.
Wow. Who in those days, who would you think had the best show? I mean, you had Today and you had Guy. When you have Aaron and you had Bub, you know,
I think Guy had a better show because of the content of their material. They had more hits.
They had the hits, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, and then like they had... like between like then it was, you know, Bernard, Dinky, and RCL and Abe on, you know, on drums, but it's like the way they perform, you know, like Bernard and Dinky would sing backgrounds.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Along with, you know, guys. So it made it like, man, it used to be so powerful.
Wow. And then, okay, so is this Dinky that, because when I spoke to Mucho, he said he was the one who was part of the Jamaica Boys.
Yeah, Dinky was a part of the Jamaica Boys, yep.
Wow, goodness. And, wow. So in all the stuff you and then you mentioned that you were also in the studio though. So they're having their live performances, but then after when they're making the tracks and remixes, what were you doing?
Man, like I said, when they was doing that, I was just soaking it up. I was learning. I would listen to stuff, and then I would go to the house, and I had the MPC, and I would try to make stuff like it.
Okay, because so, Mucho mentioned that Gene gave him a copy. Was it before they split, or did he also have an MPC in the house?
After they split, like, you know, saying, you know, Mucho became, that's, I mean, Gene kind of put Basic Black together, his rendition of Basic Black together right before they split. So GR Productions split. So that's when we got introduced to Daryl. You know, Aaron was acting up and Gene was like, hey, you know what I'm saying? They want to be acted up. I'll make me another group. And that's basically how Basic Black, that everybody knows, kind of got, you know, created.
Oh, what do you mean? So Basic Black wasn't supposed to be like a forefront group?
Well, initially he brought them up as a band. Be a group, but it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't really focused on it at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, he had signed Daryl to, because Daryl was like a major competition for Aaron.
You know what I'm saying? To replace Aaron? Was it to
vocally,
replace?
Yeah, just in case he needed to. But when the whole group kind of started acting funny, Gene was like, well, you go over here with those boys from Columbus and y'all come up with some material. So that's kind of how the Basic Black that everybody know got started.
Okay, so I mean, from your point of view, when you were there though, was Daryl already, because I think we'd say he was a drum tech, but was he around you with you when you before?
Yeah, Daryl was Guy's drum tech, so he would be out with Guy. You know what I'm saying? I would be out with today. So we were always around each other.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But at the time, he was a drum tech. He wasn't, you know what I'm saying, the singer of the group.
But could you tell he could sing? Did you know he could sing?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Because, you know what I'm saying, he was already singing and doing stuff before. You know what I'm saying? Then, you know, of course, when you come into an environment like that, everybody knows who can do what. You know, you got Dinky talking about, oh, he a beast. And Bernard is talking about, oh, he's dope and he's a beast. And so, you know what I'm saying? So you learn, you know, you get that from all those guys.
And your thought was that Gene actually thought, okay, Aaron, I'm going to get rid of you and put in Dizzo in Guy.
Well, he said that he signed Dizzo because Dizzo was a threat to the Guy thing, because they both came. Because Aaron and Dizzo were really good friends.
Oh.
So they knew each other already from church and, you know, whatnot. So, but Gene thing was saying like, hey, if they get to acting up, he can put Dizzo in Aaron's spot.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? But it just so happened that the group was acting up. So Gene was like, well, you go over here with these Columbus boys, because like I told you, you know, Mucho and Teddy was having these programming battles. You know what I'm saying?
Was it getting serious or was it fun? Or was it?
No, it was fun most of the time, but then sometimes it got a little funky, but you know what I'm saying? Just for the competition thing, you know. You know how it is when, you know, somebody said, oh, they killed y'all last night. You know what I'm saying? Teddy's a real dude. He don't like to lose. You know what I'm saying? He don't like to lose. So,
yeah.
So it became a thing where, hey, you know what I'm saying? Then Mucho is like, he like that too. He's like, hey, I'm winning. I got it on my chest. I'm Superman. You know what I'm saying? So it became a thing where, you know, they kind of like, you know, were at like, you know, it was competition, but sometimes it became a little beef or whatever, but.
Did Gene like it, or what was his thoughts?
He did, but he always tried to, you know, say he always tried to play it down. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, it didn't become an issue until the group started acting up, and that's when he put Daryl. He told Daryl to come to the house and, like, you know, go over there and start writing some songs with these guys. Basic Black, you're gonna be their lead single.
Wow. Now, and a lot of questions that a lot of fans always ask is about, you know, what could you see stuff happening that's, you know, the sort of, because JR Productions was, as I said, was the forefront of a lot of things before Uptown, before, you know, before Bad Boy and stuff. But, you know, the whole gist as to why it crumbled and all these great acts disappeared and at the same time, being there, could you see, I mean, you've got today, you've got everyone there, could you start to see camps and strains? Or, I mean, especially since you were not in the group at that point, you were almost like the middle guy.
Well, I mean, well, we didn't have, like, you saw little things, like you saw little parts with Gene. It was mostly like stuff that Kath had disagreements with Gene, like, so you start seeing those little things, but it wasn't nothing at the time that I saw that was that major that made the company split. I mean, we were actually getting ready to have our company Christmas party.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Then it was like, okay, you know, hey, and he was like, Gene was sitting down, and he was like, you know, he left me, man, he left me. So, and I was like, huh? Who left you? You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that, you know, and then the company was planning on moving to Atlanta. So I think that had a part with it too. I don't think they wanted to go to Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? And, you know what I'm saying? There's other things, I guess, that was going on with, you know, Ted and Gene, you know what I'm saying, behind the scenes, you know. But I didn't see a lot of, like, hesitation, you know what I'm saying? I mean, Gene thing was always trying to give, you know what I'm saying, his workers, his people that's making the bread, things that they want, you know what I'm saying? I like spoiling everybody, but.
Yeah. So then I guess the big thing was that the decision is made. I know Basic Black moved back to Georgia because, hey, they're from Atlanta, they're from Columbus, so this is home. Zan decides to go with GR.
Yeah, because Zan went down, Zan went with GR, and then I think initially, I don't know what happened with, you know, Abstract, because they were supposed to, from what I understood, you know what I'm saying? But Zan definitely, you know what I'm saying, ended up coming down. And I guess, you know, so he was like one of the writers. Ted asked me to stay in New York, but I was like, man, I don't know nobody up here. Like, why you want me to stay? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's stuff that they used to call, little nicknames they used to call me back in the day, the best dressed roadie, because I didn't know how to be one. So, when I was set up, I would go get dressed like the band and stuff like that.
Okay, but okay.
Then I learned how to be a roadie, you know what I'm saying? Like, you put on all black and you run across the stage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, so nobody can see you, yeah.
Yeah, so nobody can see me, but I was like, man, shoot, I wanted everybody to see me. I had my little outfit on, too.
Oh, my goodness. So Christmas party, the group breaks up. You had Redhead, you had Abstract, you had Today, and they decide, you know, because Today didn't come out with another album. They just folded.
They just folded. I mean, because, like, you know, Gene, I guess Gene had them on the paper, and then, like, you know, I don't know what their relationship was with Ted, but Redhead kind of separated. He went on his separate way. Today. End up doing something, another album, because their first album was good. So they end up doing another album, but
Ted wasn't
involved in that, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think, you know, Gene had a song with Mucho on there, I think, something like that, maybe on the second album, if I'm correct.
Why you get funky on me? Who did that production?
That was initially Ted did, you know what I'm saying, the original, like that. So, Ted was supposed to be the original person that was doing something on it, and then I think somebody else might have got involved with it. Maybe Spider-Man Freeze or somebody else got involved.
But he did the main track first, and then they just.
Yeah, I think Ted had something like the first track, if I remember correctly. Ted had the first version of that.
Why You Get Funky on Me?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because it does sound like him, but then. He's not credited for doing the production and stuff.
Right.
Okay, so they did this. They did a second album because they're still on the Motown and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, and but for you guys, but you decided, you know, it's New York. I'm not. This is too much, too cold. I don't know anyone here. I'm gonna go back with my boys back.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we talk about moving back to Atlanta, you mentioned that in those days you were in the studio, even sleeping under the console. What were you allowed to get involved in any production Teddy was doing, or were you just watching?
No, I was just watching. I mean, he never kicked me out. He always, like, you know, when I would be in there, he was like, you know, I guess he was enthused about, you know what I'm saying, like, I guess I don't know. It was funny because, like, you know, they were kicking other people out. So, so other people would get kicked out, you know what I'm saying? But I was always allowed to stay. I guess because, like, you know, like I said, I had all of the, like, the company sounds. So I guess I was like the little it guy, whatever.
Okay.
Because I had the sounds, I had the show stuff, and I had, you know, I was like today's production guy and running running the part of the show that Mucho didn't do. Like, you know, Mucho did the programming, and I pretty much helped put the rest of, you know, saying the setups and everything together. So
yeah,
I guess I was allowed to stay because of that. You know, I never thought about why I was allowed to stay, because I know a lot of people got kicked out.
Yeah, I mean, was he? So, I think the hard thing is because John Marie was talking about how Teddy was with the keys and stuff, but then Teddy talks about being very technical, using the computers to create sound. So when you were watching, was he using the keyboard, because the keyboard is to make sounds, or was he just using the MP3 just to create the sound?
The MP3 and the DW, it was a couple of pieces that he was using during that time. You know,
so he wouldn't just get the keyboards and start to create the sounds, and it wasn't like that, using the keyboards to make music?
No, it was like, it's like, you know, sit down and he'd make music, and then, like, you know, he would create certain things. Then you had Dave Way, who was a part of, you know, like the second, like the Future album, you know, but Dave Way was the engineer that I always knew. So, like, Dave would do funky stuff with, like, a reverb unit, and like, Ted would go like, yo, I like that, and they'll take that and do something else with it, and he'll flip it some other kind of way. So it was like, you know, it was really, you know, wild watching, you know, saying the whole thing come together.
Because, as I said, a lot of us would always remember seeing Bernard Bell, Teddy, and Dave Way, like with High Five, Kissing Game, and
they were doing like Bernard was like, you know, saying that guy that was kind of like doing a lot of skeletons, and then Ted would take those skeletons and build from that, and then they would create stuff together. You know what I'm saying?
And then
so like all those great, lovely intros everybody liked from the Guy albums, and those beautiful piano intros, and, you know, seeing the Michael Jackson stuff, all that, those great intros.
Yeah.
A lot of that was Bernard Bell.
Was Bernard a singer, or what was he?
Yep. Okay. He used to be a part of the Jets from today's group, the Jets back in the day. Originally, it was Bernard Bell was in the group.
Was that not Timmy's thing?
That was Bernard Bell and Big Bub and all of them guys, like I said. So they were originally the original guys that were in part of that group.
Legit.
The Jets.
Yeah. I thought Timmy did. Well, I thought it was Timmy Gatlin's sort of thing.
Nah, I mean, it was like, okay, Timmy might have been in the group, but I know that.
Bernard, no, not in the group. Not in the group. I thought he did the production for them.
Oh no. That's possible. I don't know who did the production for him. I just know that who was in the...
I think he had one of his cousins in Legend. Okay, and I heard him on a different interview, so I didn't ask him directly. But okay, so he was singing, and he stopped singing, and he went to do background writing and stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people might not know that Bernard Bell is the brother to Regina Bell.
Exactly.
Big family singers and stuff. So you're in the studio, you're watching Dave Way. He was the engineer doing mixing.
Yep, Dave was doing mixing, and I mean, Dave was transforming stuff, man. Dave would be putting stuff through an effect unit and make it do something totally different. And then Ted would take that, and then he flip it another kind of way. You know what I'm saying? So it was very interesting for me to watch and to, you know, be a part of. I think it definitely made its mark on me as an engineer and a producer.
Now, did you then start to think, when you were seeing all this stuff, them creating the sounds, did you start thinking, this is where I might want to be? Because I guess when you're in the studio, you're not on the road.
And pretty much that's where I was. I just didn't participate in production at the time. But like when Mucho and them started doing stuff, then I started learning how to use the drum machine and produce.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Which was like, you know, it was a good thing I had a key to the locker with all the equipment.
Yeah.
So I had to bring Mucho a drum machine home, and I had to bring me one home because he, like, when I brought one home, Mucho was pretty much just been confiscated that one, you know what I'm saying? So,
Dave Way's wife, isn't he?
Yes.
Did it surprise you that he was able to do all this R&B sort of stuff?
No. I mean, I didn't never looked at it like that, because I grew up in the 80s, so I listened to a whole lot of people that had like dope stuff, you know what I'm saying? The,
So Kenny Logan,
Hall and Oates,
I think it's different back in the 80s. I think a lot of people in the 90s would be surprised, because I think someone like John B or Robin Thicke, they'll be like, why is this, or Call Me Bad, they'll say, why are these white guys singing R&B? But if you grew up in the 80s, it was Kenny Logan, you could even, you know, Michael Ball. I mean,
the Doobie Brothers, come on,
and it was, you know? No one complained, it was because it was just good music. I mean, it was just good music. Okay, so, but at least some people, if we see Dave Way's name, he was white, but I could tell Teddy's production when Dave Way was around. There's a way his snares, the drums would sound with Dave Way. Kissing Game or Do Me Right or the Guy album, you could hear
that ambiance they always put on it. They always, that little extra zip zing that they put on.
There was something different than when Dave Way, when I saw his name on the credits, I could tell that was the Teddy stuff. It changed when after the Future album, the sound sort of changed quite a different, and that was it changed. You think it changed with time, but I did miss that 80s type of stuff. So then, you know, Teddy tells you to stay, but you decide, you know, I guess what are the things that you heard him produce when you used to be in the studio? What were the songs?
Like all of the today remixes after Him and Me, like Girl I Got My Eye on You, Take It Off. The Kissing Game, was The Kissing Game done? No. What was that we were working on? Deja. What else we worked? What he's worked on that I was there for? I want to say name came back. James. What's his name?
Who's that? Not George Michael. Not George Michael. Not Joe Boy George. But James Ingram.
James Ingram.
It's Real. Okay. Real. Okay.
Like that stuff. I was like, you know, listening to them do that. That stuff, like I said, it was man. And then, like I said, all of the today stuff and guy remixes that they were working on. So it's like, you know, it was a whole just vibe, man.
Okay, I'm gonna ask one. So Omar Hudson, he asked a question about back in the days, remixes were popular and in some cases sounded like a completely different song altogether. Why do you feel the remixes died into today? Because back
people
in those
got lazy,
days,
man, they got lazy and people didn't want to pay for stuff and. It's like you didn't have those producers that did it like that. Like we were, that's like that was a sticker for us. Like if you were some part of Teddy's camp, like you if you got a remix from the Future family, you got four or five different versions of something.
Wow.
And that would be like, you know, different producers that, you know what I'm saying, came to the table. And of course, you know what I'm saying, Teddy's sitting there like a DJ and trying to make sure everything is meshing together. And it's like you got little tidbits and stuff from different producers, but usually it's like one record, one of the guys has got like the main basis. And then you got other stuff from different guys that they added from those different versions. So I think just people just got, you know what I'm saying, they got lazy with it. I mean, it used to be fun. I mean, it made things sound different. You know what I'm saying? Only thing I would change about it is I would want to get some publishing credits off of it. That's about it.
Oh, so that back in those days when you did a remix, it wouldn't be you would have no publishing on there.
Nah, you just got paid. That was pretty much it. You know?
Okay. Because in some cases it was almost like another song. In some cases. Yeah. Okay. I'll get back to some of the other questions later. So they split up. You moved back to Georgia. You're working with back to Atlanta. You're working with Basic Black.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved when they were making their album, or what were you doing at that point?
They were pretty much putting the album together. I kind of like was when they were recording, so all the kind of stuff that was, all the production stuff was pretty much kind of done when I got back to them.
Oh, you got back later than them, or what happened?
I got back later than them because, like, when I first went back, they were already back about a month or so before I got back, and then I initially went home. You know, I went home for a couple of months, and then
make peace with like that and everything.
And then I moved up to Atlanta, and it's like, you know, then I was working at rental center. I was like, okay, I gotta get a job.
Okay.
And then while they were working on stuff, I would just, you know, so I would take the rental center van and sneak to the studio with them And, you know, saying, then Gene finally said, man, stop taking them people, man. They're going to lock you up. Come on up here. You want to work with your guys in the way? Just come on up here. We'll give you a little something. You know, we stay at the house. And, you know what I'm saying? Then, like, we were getting ready to do, recording with, you know, the guys and start rehearsing and stuff like that. So Gene was like, you're going to start rehearsals real soon. So just come on up here. We got you.
Okay. Okay. You know, it's, you know, Nothing But a Party is probably one of, still one of my top 10 tracks.
Yeah.
I used to always think that, man, I'm sure Teddy did that, but I was surprised. It's still very current to today. They did most of the recording before you went. So you were then helping them with the show.
The live stuff, the show and the live stuff. And, you know, I was around when we were doing, you know, saying, I mean, I'm a homeboy, so I'm just around. And they're doing Nothing But a Party videos, and I'm there at the video shoot. You know what I'm saying? So I was around with all of that. I actually didn't get into the production side of it because I still was new to the production game. And, like, you know, they were, like, mainly the guys, so like Mucho, Artisan, Spec, you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, I would tinkle around with stuff, but it wasn't to the point where I was, like, creating anything as of yet.
Yeah. But then when they did their videos, Nothing But a Party comes out and She's Mine and Whatever It Takes, is it?
Whatever It Takes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Special Kind of Fuel comes out. I mean, with around Georgia, were they known as like, wow, Basic Black?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah,
I mean, even in Europe, then we all knew about Basic Black because that Nothing But a Party was a big international hit.
All over Atlanta, everybody knew who Basic Black was. Like, you know, saying we were like the local at the time, the local celebrity scene at the time. You know, saying, but yeah, everybody knew who Basic Black was.
Did you think they were going to be as big as Guy? Because did they come out the same time as the Future album, or did they come out before?
Yeah, I think that they probably could have been. I mean, like, you know, we were doing shows, and I think they could have been. You know, saying just as big as Guy, you know what I'm saying? Because Dizzo was like, he's a beast. So
yeah.
And the songs were great. It's like, you know what I'm saying? The main thing was because Teddy and Gene split, like, you know, people were still familiar with Guy. So I guess it was a thing where promoters was like, okay, I don't want to make Teddy mad. I'm gonna just, you know what I'm saying? So if Gene would be like, hey, you know, he would try to get us on shows with Guy.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. It's like, Bad Boy and Death Row being on the same billing.
Right. So he's trying to get us on shows with them. It basically, you know, saying they was like, not going down.
Yeah. I mean, Teddy's still a bigger name. I mean, production is there. Yeah.
Right. So we just, you know, we had that little, you know what I'm saying? So they didn't let us give it on any shows with guys. So I think that was the catalyst of them going to the next level versus, you know, or being their competition to the point where, hey, they're on the same level.
Yeah.
As Guy. Because it was kind of like the same vibe, whatever.
Yeah, it was the same vibe. And I guess people who are not familiar with the 90s would be surprised to find out that in those days you had to do a lot of shows. You had to pretty much work yourself. It's not like now that you just do a video and you can sit at home and stuff, or even in the night, even in the 2000s.
This now thing is crazy. I mean, I still love the live element in that.
Yeah, because they used to have to do shows. They had to work, and people used to do reviews. And it's like, have you seen Guy? So I think now they could have been on. You know, no one would have. They just needed music. But back in those days, it was the shows that really made a difference.
Yep, exactly.
So. So what were you then doing then? So, okay, today still doing videos, they're still getting their name out there. Were you then supporting them on the road? What was your transition?
Well, you know, saying when the company split, I just kind of like transitioned to Georgia with Basic Black. So we started doing the road stuff. I was their production manager.
Okay.
And pretty much doing the same thing with them I was doing for today, you know, running. But by that time, I'm transitioning to doing monitors and, like I said, sometimes front of house. Depends on if our guy wasn't able to go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I helped did that with Basic Black. And I did do one band thing with Zan, where we went to Japan. and I did the band for Bazan for a little while. You know what I'm saying? And then when Basic Black got ready to go out, I just started going out with them.
Just briefly, Bazan, he came out with the album, then disappeared. I mean, and you know, what did you understand why?
I don't know what happened with that. I mean, I thought the album was dope. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. So it just kind of disappeared off of the, you know what I'm saying? It disappeared pretty much. Like, because we did a couple of shows and we had planned on doing a tour, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah. So, you know, after the whole road stuff, because I've heard from Speck and Amuchi about how things ended with Gene and stuff, but what were you doing? How did your sort of career and everything start to change and stuff?
I mean, I was there for pretty much the whole ending of that. And when we started mixing with some guys in Atlanta, you know, we end up in a break. The whole situation ended up just breaking apart. So once again, I'm getting ready to go home. And I think I'm home for a week. And before that, Mucho calls me and he's like, yo, you know, Ted want me to come to Virginia. You think I should do it? And I was like, well, you ain't doing nothing down here. Why not go? You know what I'm saying? He's like, you know, the guys is kind of mad because I'm talking about going. And I was like, man, listen, you know what I'm saying? This is what we do. We try to achieve our dream. If Ted wants you to come, you know, to Virginia, go check it out and see what you thought. You know what I'm saying? So he comes up here, and after he'd been here about a month or so, he called me. It's around Thanksgiving or Christmas time. And he was like, yo, Ted, looking for somebody to go out on the road with Rex and Effect. You know, do you want to go? I mean, would you come up here? And I was like, hell yeah, I come up here. You know what I'm saying? So,
what were you doing, though? What were you doing this time?
I mean, I was back at home, and I was like, I was programming a little stuff, because by that time I had an MPC, so I was like, you know, messing around with production and just doing stuff at the crib, playing at church.
Okay.
And then, like I said, he asked me to come up, and then my dad had a used car lot that he was getting ready to do, what we were getting ready to do together. So I'm at this crossroad where my dad's doing something. And he's like, well, I'm getting ready to open this car lot. You go help me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to help you. And then this thing comes up. So, but this time he wasn't mad at me because I was like, well, Pop, you know what I'm saying? You know, I love music. That's my dream. I want to see if this opportunity works. And if it don't, then I'll be back. And he's like, well, go ahead, son. I understand. And so.
Oh, that's good, man.
And so when I came up here, I originally came to Virginia to do, like, you know, be on the road with Rex as their, you know, like their little production manager, run their show from the front of the house and do front of the house with them.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying, it just so happened that, you know, Mucho's crazy. He asked me, like, yo, he's like, you got your demo tape? And I was like, what you mean? I got my demo tape. But let me get it. And I was like, man, what you want with it? He's like, man, let me get your demo tape. And he just happened to, you know what I'm saying, we were working on, I don't know if he was working on, they had started working on the Right Here thing or something like that, maybe.
Oh, is it the
SWB? I started working on the Right Here thing.
Is it with the
Yeah, Ken Ortiz came down before and met with Ted and them about doing the Right Here remix. And, like, they were, like, talking about the sample. So, I think that they were just starting to work on that. And Mucho played my demo tape. Or it was either working on that or working on the Blackstreet Baby Be Mine stuff for the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, so Mucho was, like, playing my demo tape. And I was sitting back there like, man, why are you playing all these songs or whatever, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm still new. I don't know how nobody really thinks about my stuff. I had did some stuff in Atlanta with this group, Hard About Boys, which was a company we were working with in Atlanta. Mm. And so, you know, he started playing stuff. And then Ted came in and he goes, whose stuff is that? You know what I'm saying? He's like, Mucho was like, that's Sprague stuff. He's like, Sprague stuff? Sprague produced? He's like, yeah, man, he produced. Yeah, he produced. And he's like, well, play me something else. And he was like, play me something else. And I was like, man, you ain't want, I'm thinking to myself, man, you ain't gonna be playing all that stuff. he's like, okay, something else on there. You know what I'm saying? So Mucho pretty much played my whole demo tape. And after that, Ted just, you know, came and he was like, yo, he's like, I ain't know you produce. He's like, you wanna be a producer for me? I was like, at that point, I knew who was doing the record. So, like, now, my mentor was asking me to be a producer for the company.
Yeah.
And, you know, saying we had Franklin Grant, like, you know, Franklin Grant was the engineer there at the time. You had Ty Fife. You had Tom Telefair was still around. Chris was still around. But, you know, saying mainly it was Mucho and Ty that was doing, kind of doing everything. And so when I came around, I was kind of like the middle of the road, because I played keyboards. And so, you know, Ty was a sample dude, and Mucho was more drum and bass stuff. And like I did, like, you know, play and melody. So I would take samples that, you know, and replay them versus like sampling it and try to do it that way. So my situation was kind of always in a good situation because, you know, because I played keyboards.
Yeah,
so I
would fit
into a lot of stuff, and Ted was like, oh, I like that. You know, take that to the A room. I like that. Take that to the A room.
Wow.
And then he would take, like, what Ty did, and he'd take what Mucho did, and, like, put it together, and then that's how we got certain remixes.
So what's one of the first ones that you did?
My first one is my first remix is Right Here with Mucho and Ted and All-Star.
Is it? No. So... the first SWV one was I'm So Into You. Did you do that one?
That was me and Ted. That was pretty much me and Ted.
Oh, that so I'm So Into You, that's with Rex, with Arkill at the with rapping?
Yeah, so you know saying, so that was pretty much Mucho had some pieces in that, but that was pretty much the basis of that was pretty much me and Ted on that. And then we were working on the Right Here thing, and like All-Star did like a little article because they got into it about it a few months ago, and
All-Star and Teddy,
yeah, they, you know, saying them and Brian Morgan and all of them got into like this little internet beef over who did what and all this kind of thing, and you know, saying pretty much, you know, what happened was at the end of the day, Ken Ortiz brought the record down. He wanted All-Star to be a part of it because I think he initially had All-Star in to do the remix. All-Star sent down his version of what, you know, how were they going to flip the sample with it, you know what I'm saying? Because, it, like, most of them had already had the basis of that. So they came down to do, you know what I'm saying, that. And when they came down, Ted had got some rental stuff that All-Star couldn't really use it because it didn't go with it. But his disc didn't work with it. So in the process of them doing that, you know, Franklin, which is the engineer, goes, you're a producer, why don't you mess with it?
Oh, you know, tell Teddy.
So Teddy had already left already that night. So okay. I was, because Teddy pretty much put All-Star with me to get the stuff working, because I was Teddy's keyboard tech as well.
Oh, to play the music.
Right, so when All-Star says the keyboard guy, and Ted had a cable with something that I liked when I came back in, I'm the keyboard guy he's talking about.
Okay.
So basically, you know what I'm saying, Mucho them had already had a basis of the record there, but it's some stuff that, the stuff that All-Star was brought to the table that was supposed to have been added. Ted didn't like the way it sounded because he's like, okay, it's too sloppy. I don't like that. I don't like how the drums hit. And that didn't sound like, you know, a Ted production. So he was like, you know, well, we got to do it over. So, and when he got the equipment, that was the plan. But the equipment didn't work. I took the sounds that we had, that All-Star had there, and then I basically replaced drum sounds and snares with stuff that they were already using, that I had access to from, you know, say, I'm So Into You. So I took those sounds, and I put those sounds in the place and started messing around with that and added some stuff keyboard-wise, you know what I'm saying? And then when Ted came in, he was like, what's that? I said, this is the stuff from All-Star. He's like, yeah, that sounds more like what I want.
He didn't know you did it.
No, he didn't know I did it at the time. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, you know what I'm saying? So he's like, you know, I thought this stuff didn't work pretty much. You know, I was like, this is me, you know, taking it and doing what I had to do with. He goes, oh, I like that. Like, just take that to the A room and tell Frank to put that with, you know, what we already got. And then, so that's kind of like how the mesh came with all of us working on the record, you know what I'm saying? Versus.
Yeah, you know, because that's one of my best. I mean, Brian is great, but I did prefer the remix, the New Jack remix of that track better than the original. Right. And I also preferred it better than the All-Star one, because I think the All-Star one, I preferred, maybe I'm biased towards the New Jack Teddy and stuff, but I did prefer the ones that you guys did with Rex.
It was just a lot tighter. Like, you know, All-Star, I mean, the one he did was cool, but it just didn't have that tight cohesiveness that, Teddy to have, or his sound to have. You know what I'm saying?
So, but then when you guys sent RCA back the versions you did he say, hey, they took my stuff, or was there?
It was huge beef, man. It was a huge beef, man. It was crazy. It was huge beef.
Because the Teddy one, actually, because I was in London at that time, and the Teddy one was actually big over here. It was bigger than the original, because no one really, the original one didn't do too well until the remix came out, and it came out the same time as Baby Be Mine. So that was, it was like almost like it was blowing up here. So, but did Brian get, was he upset about the fact that what was his?
Brian wasn't upset. I mean, Brian really didn't know anything about it, you know, at the time. So he wasn't upset. All-Star was the main guy that was mainly like, you know, saying he had a problem with it because, you know, we took his stuff and like, you know, basically resurfaced his old remixes. So he was kind of like upset about, like, you know, and then his name is not, you know, the prominent name, which, you know, it was just crazy because producers back in the day didn't get it. Like, you know, you ain't the prominent producer, so why would your name be prominent?
Yeah, but they had 5 singles on it, and so he had his own version, and then there was one with rap and there's one without rap. So it was a separation, so you could tell which one was All-Star, which one was you guys and stuff.
Well, that's because they did that afterwards, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
They did that afterwards. I mean, initially it was just going to be that one version, but then All-Star made a big out of it. And Ken Ortiz said, well, we'll put your versions on there, just, you know.
Okay, to make it pay all the people. Okay, but the one the radio played was the one that you guys did. Yeah. And then did you do the, so then after that, I didn't know you did Human Nature, the remix. Is that the?
I'm in on the Human Nature remix. My name is not there. Ted was like, yo, it's like, you know what I'm saying? I got to put All-Star name on it, and, you know what I'm saying, everybody's on it, so it's a sample, so, you know, your name going to be on the first single, so that's why my name is on the first single. It was supposed to be on I'm So Into You, but they put Franklin Grant's name up there instead of my name.
Okay. On the Human Nature remix, was All-Star on that? I didn't see his name.
Yeah, All-Star is on the Human Nature remix.
Did he do anything on it, or...?
Yeah, that's originally what it was. He had an original version, and that was a version that was, well, both of the stuff that he brought out was kind of like not tight musically.
Okay.
But that was the beef at the end of the day, because All-Star had, you know, done one, and then it wasn't right, and then Ted didn't have the equipment, and so it became a big thing. But when he came in the studio the next day, and what I set up, you know what I'm saying, from the sound that he left, you know what I'm saying, he was cool because, oh, I hit my sample in there. You know what I'm saying?
okay.
So he was cool with that, and then we end up using, you know what I'm saying, that version, you know what I'm saying, with that, what Mucho and Ted already done.
Okay. So did the SWV come to the studio to re-record the vocals?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. They came and redid the vocals over me and Ted. Me, Ted, and Mucho pretty much redid the vocals with them.
For both tracks?
For both songs, yeah.
Okay.
We just added stuff for both songs, yeah.
And then was Pharrell doing the S? Who did the S to B?
Pharrell. Okay. Pharrell did that, yeah.
So what was he and Chad doing on those days when you, because you must have been young and you're looking at them and thinking, they're just like me, or did you, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, they were kind of like in the mix already a little bit coming to the studio, and then Ted was like, yo, you know what I'm saying? He, like, for real, would, like, write little things for him. So, you know what I'm saying, it became a thing where, you know, that's how it started. And then we saw them at the Neptune as the band. And it's like, okay, oh, they got a band, so let's get them as, you know, as a group. And then Tammy Lucas had a lot to do with that whole thing with them signing as producers and stuff like that.
Okay. So, but could you tell that they were going to be, that they had something different?
No. No, not at the time. They were just young and just had a lot of energy like everybody else. I mean, that was there. I mean, the people that were there had a lot of energy, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, so you, because it was yourself, was Bernard also with you guys there?
No, Bernard was gone by the time I got there, Bernard was gone. You know what I'm saying? He was already gone.
Okay. Yeah. He didn't want to move from New York to...
Nah, they had already done the Michael Jackson and the Bobby Brown stuff was already done, so...
You missed that.
Yeah, I missed all of that stuff. You know, we'll talk about some of maybe the Bobby Brown stuff or
some remixes on Michael's.
Yeah, some of the late Bobby Brown stuff. He might have caught some of the end of that just being around.
Okay.
I don't think he did it in the production, but it was just being around during that time.
Did you then see Abstract again? Because Mary and Marsha.
Nah.
You missed them. Okay.
They weren't around, and I mean, I saw Mary because she was a writer, so that
Yeah, because I know they did backgrounds for the Bobby album, but you missed the Bobby album. Then I guess, because by the time you guys did the I'm So Into You and the Human Nature remix, Blackstreet are coming out because they've done the Baby Be Mine.
Yeah, they've done the Baby Be Mine. And then, like, you know what I'm saying? So when they shifted to Dave Hollister, and then we started writing new material for that. So that's like a part where I came. Heavy into play with, you know, with how things were working.
Oh, what do you mean?
Like, you know what I'm saying, before I let you go, is like, you know, part of the bridge is mine. You know what I'm saying? I like the way you work. I got programming on there, even though, you know, my name is listed as assistant, you know what I'm saying, producer or whatever, you know what I'm saying, but I'm doing like production on there, so it's like...
Before I let you go, what part were you, is it
like the bridge part. So that's like the bridge. Some of the bridge was mine. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, is it the where Dave says play for me, Teddy?
I don't want to say about that chord structure right there.
Yeah,
is pretty much mine. They were playing with stuff and they were singing, and when they were writing it, and I was actually sitting on the roads playing some church chords that I was. Cause I was trying to learn how to play the song, and I was like, "Oh, I like this. This chord would go right here." And Ted was like, "Yo, what was that you played?" So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, my name was on there. Didn't get no pub, but my name was on there. So
okay. And so, which other ones did you do on the Blackstreet album?
I like the way you work. I'm on Loves and Need. Confessions is, you know what I'm saying, my production.
Is it off the first? We're talking about the first album. Yeah. I like you where you work. Which ones?
I like the way you work. I like the way you work.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What else is on there? I'm on a remix of Tonight. And on some programming on Tonight. So
not the one with Craig Mack and SWV.
Yeah, like the remix is me and Ted. You know what I'm saying, on that.
Okay.
But it's like, it's so much stuff that we worked on together that, like, you know what I'm saying, like, I was battling the whole time. Didn't get credits, but, you know, I got my check type thing.
So, and I know we've heard a lot from a lot of artists and producers about publishing and the business and stuff. But when you were there, when you were getting your check, did you know about the publishing? Did you know that, hey, I'm not getting my name and stuff?
Well, that's not really. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, I mean, I got paid. So I kind of like saw that with Gene and them, but I didn't know how the whole thing really, really, really worked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I learned later, and then I started to be more conscientious about what I was getting.
But back in those times, when they'll give you a check for stuff, you were like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it's more money than I was seeing.
Yeah.
You know, $500, $3,000, $5,000. I was like, cool. You
know, okay. Okay. Yeah, so you do the Blackstreet, you're doing parts of the Blackstreet stuff. Then what else were you working on?
Pretty much every remix that was coming through there, like, you know, saying Pumps in the Bumps. That's me and Ted, pretty much.
Oh, the MC Hammer stuff. Okay.
The MC Hammer. You had Will Smith. You had Quo.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Tony Thompson. I mean, all the stuff that, you know, mainly all the remixes that came through. Was pretty much I'm a part of, you know what I'm saying, besides the MC Light, you know what I'm saying, with that was pretty much Mucho. I had a version of 90s Girl,
the slow version.
I don't know if it's still out there or if it's out there anywhere, but there's a slow version with Chance rapping on it. That's like my version. Wow. They took Chance's rap from my version and put it on the new version.
Was that the one that was released?
That was the one that was released, the one with Chance.
Okay. Oh, it looks like your camera went off.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I gotta get off of here or not. Let's see what's going on. Yeah, I do got. Okay, all right. So I gotta get out. I do, man. We gonna have to change this to part two because I gotta get off of here, man.
Oh, okay. I mean, somebody just asked
We can do a part two tomorrow, or you know what I'm saying?
Okay, I didn't even know at the time. Okay, just real quick, Tony. I mean, Omar asked me about what was it like working with Tony Thompson. Did you get him in the studio?
Yeah, man, that was awesome. Tony Thompson was great. We actually went to LA to finish that record. We started it in Virginia, and then we had to go to LA to finish the record. Babyface wanted us to come to LA to finish the record and mix it. And we actually, Ted, myself, and Serban, you know what I'm saying, who's the engineer on the record, we had to do almost like a 2.5-day bench trying to get the record done.
Why would you have to do that?
It was trying to get it out for some deadline, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know, we had to make some changes. So we went out to L.A. It's like, you know, Babyface wanted to, because, you know, he was like, yo, come out to L.A., you know what I'm saying? So we went out to L.A. And since we were already going to go out there anyway to work with Mike, but Babyface is like, yo, why don't you just come a couple days early and let's get the record done, because we had already sent it. And it's like, you know, the original producer, John, had some stuff that he wanted to kind of incorporate with, you know, what we were doing. So we went to L.A. and just finished the record there.
Okay. But how was it? How was Tony? I mean, because
Tony was great, man. I mean, because I knew Tony from just doing, from before, from doing shows. So I would see them, you know, saying, I would see I-5 with today. Yeah.
Thanks for watching. Please remember to subscribe to the channel, but most importantly, to press the notification bell so that you can be notified when we do have a new interview. Loads to come, but thanks a lot for watching. You know.